Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. American Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment. Just for you, your main man, Marvin Rome, in the book. I'm coming to you live. Community conversation today. We're going to be talking to men in action about an opportunity to understand the issues at hand for African Americans. You won't want to miss it. Join us. Tell a friend. 457-7950. blogtalkradio.com/AAEmpowerment. Can't beat it. There is no better. Brothers and sisters, there is no greater love than for self and kind. We have to do that work of administering change within our community. This is a plea. Let's begin to administer, right? It's like healing. It's like medication. It's like a salve, right? We have to be able to administer healing to our community. We're going to have to be able to do that work of intimately gaining the confidence within ourselves in relationship as a family to promote the well-being and the healing of our people within the African-American community in the diaspora. It's just as simple as that. We're going to have to promote. We're going to have to really exude it as well, right? Because if we don't do this and we're waiting for somebody else to do it, we're wrong. We're out of order, right? We're out of balance. And to continue to be out of balance will continue those things that continue to damage our people, right? We're going to have to disrupt poverty, for example. We're going to have to disrupt dysfunction in the home and in the family and in the community. We're going to have to disrupt the prison pipe, the school-to-prison pipeline, for example. We're going to have to disrupt health disparities, for example. And it goes on and on and on and on. And the work has to be done by elevating ourselves, but also to be able to transcend and transform into a knowledge base or a tool for information, for development, for motivation, for empowerment, for self-love, for self-help, to educating ourselves on our needs. No one, no group knows our needs better than we do. Now, some of us want to deny the needs, and that's okay. But just like anybody else who deny their health issues or their mental health issues, won't be operating in self-awareness. And what we're creating is a platform for self-awareness. It's just some things like Brother Booker said that we got to be honest with ourselves about. Wherever we are in the condition that we find ourselves in, whether that's if you're at the top of the food chain or at the very bottom or somewhere in the middle, wherever you are, you have to activate from there. We need to be in those schools. We need to be in those communities. We need to be in the community centers. We need to be in the streets. We need to be on the corners. We need to be standing by those corners to spell. I ain't going to put myself in harm's way. I'm not going to put myself in danger for nobody, right? Somebody put themselves in harm's way for you, rode on those ships for you. Somebody lost their lives for you. That's why you're here, right? You didn't get here by chance. Somebody had to make a sacrifice. Somebody rode the back of the bus. Somebody walked to work. Somebody did something. We cannot forget the contributions that our ancestors did against their will or that they made against their will for us to survive to be here. Now, brother said, well, I would have jumped off the ship and you wouldn't have been here, but those who did kept right on going so that we could have a voice right now, that we could live through the atrocities. We could live through the pain, and now we begin to heal. And we begin to resurrect ourselves. So there's five components that I want to speak to really quickly before we get into the show. Again, 845-277-9250. We're talking about men in action. We're going to talk about an opportunity to understand the issues at hand. What are the issues that we're facing, right? And I know some people are like, why we got to keep talking about what the issues are? Because they're issues. And if you don't solve a problem, it never stops being a problem. In order to make change, you got to solve some things. So let's go to the peace process, peace concept. P, a political action agenda, really looking at teaching our people to understand the politics or the political system in the American system. Giving our people a broad understanding of how politics work, how law works, how the legal system works, how the justice system works, how policing works, and then educate our people on navigating these systems so we don't make the mistakes and become victims in a system that we're fodder for. Next is E, is economic agenda. Understanding capitalism and money management and how, and just sit down and think about this for a minute, how it works, how to use financial, fiscal accountability in your family, in your home, in your community, that we understand the value of a dollar and we understand how money works, how to save it, how to manage it, how to utilize it, how to invest it, so that we can continue to create those institutions that define our own reality for ourselves. We got to do a greater job of circulating that dollar back into our community. Next, it is the A, and this is personal, right? Do you have your A together? Your athletic agenda, your health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition agenda, which covers mental health, physical health, emotional health, and spiritual health. Are you backing away from the table? Is your weight in order? Is your blood pressure down? Are your sugar levels and cholesterol levels down? Right? We lead the league in health disparities. We do. Or you can say the world if you like. But there are some issues that we have to face health-wise. Not only physical health, but mental health and emotional health. We get back into balance, and that's the work that we need to do. But we have to be aware of the changes that we need to make, and then we need to make the changes. Because somebody could tell you, but you still might not activate on it, or you might not act on it. But those are the things that we have to do for ourselves as we continue to use education as a tool for development. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, the C, culture, relevant cultural programs. To educate us again, but give us confidence in who we are. You know we've been demoralized in many, many ways, and we don't think highly of ourselves in many regards, but that's changing. And the more that we educate ourselves, the more that we give our people confidence in who they are and what they look like and the texture of our hair and the shape of our noses and so on and so forth, we begin to discharge and dislodge those value systems that were placed on us, and we begin to be confident in God's greatest creation, which is you, just the way you are, with your beautiful light brown or mocha skin or dark chocolate. It's you. You're the creation. You're it. Lastly, is a comprehensive education. That education spans across the board that really gets us to look at who we are, how we are, and make the changes necessary. Join us, naaea.weebly.com. Help us promote the peace concept and the peace process around the country and around the world for our people to improve, because we're helping each other help ourselves, and that's the only way that we're going to get well and going to get healthy and we're going to improve. And now, for the Stan Macklin moment, I'll be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
That, my friends and family, is a tribute to my brother Stan Macklin, who's no longer with us. But he's talking about creating institutions that define our own reality. And when you think into that process just a bit, are we creating those institutions that define our own reality, that employ our people, that create jobs and opportunity, and put food on the table, right, to buy clothes and shoes for our kids, and we're doing it? Are we creating outlets for the development of production in the areas of the basic needs that we have? Toothbrush, toothpaste, soap, underwear, deodorant, and building from there, shoes. Those things that we need, can we begin to produce those products, just the basic products, and share them in our communities? Those are the things that we have to do in order to take the first step toward creating our own, right? And where we can feed each other, we can clothe each other, we can help each other, and we can build infrastructure. And next, maybe if we reach a way out there, we can start building our own cars. How about that? That's a thought. And now, for my favorite segment, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Hold on, today is going to be a good one. Brother George, come on here, bring it. You're joining us today.
Bring it. What? Be right here. We're not going
nowhere.
Be right.
How are you today, sir?
Doing fine, brother. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm excited, man. This is going to be a great show. Me in action. An opportunity to understand the issues at hand.
Yeah. I'm multitasking today, but we're going to make it happen. Today, Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Saba is Kuji Chagalia, which is self-determination. To define for ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Man, that's a very powerful symbol. Kuji Chagalia. This symbol represents patience, self-containment, self-discipline, and self-control. Without these things, we cannot grow to be responsible, well-balanced, and productive members of our family and our community. These qualities, along with honesty and respect for all living things, are essential to the development of our character and help to determine the course of our lives, positive or negative, in this lifetime. Now, for the Willie List segment, I have a quote, and I think it's a very significant quote that Dr. Carter G. Woodson said. He said, you know, he wrote the book called Miseducation of the Negro and also The Education of the Negro. And one of the things that he quoted in Miseducation of the Negro was, sometimes education is a process of what you push out rather than what you take in. Sometimes true education is what you push out and not what you take in. So, Brother Marvin, I would like to take the time right now, you know, because of multitasking, to give a description, before you give me the question of the week, to give a description of Men in Action. We had an event last week, and I was, you know, honored to give a description of who we are and the development and the point that we're at right now. And what Men of Action is a group of African-American males who have different skill sets, different political views, different religious and spiritual views. And the beautiful thing about all of that is that we're making a sincere attempt to come together to resolve as many of the issues in our community as we possibly can. And on today's show, we're going to have some of those brothers with the different skill sets and different views give a brief description of what they do in the community and how, you know, some of the other brothers can assist them in doing that. So with that being said, brother, you can give me the question of the week.
Thank you, brother. It's now time for the African-American Empowerment Question of the Week, sponsored by Brother George. Question, brother. How do we, you like that, begin to define ourselves or redefine ourselves again? To get that self-control, right? To operate in honesty and respect and develop character within our people. What you got, brother?
Well, thing is we have to stop allowing other people to define us. We have to stop letting the educational system define us. And we have to do some research. We have to begin to study who we were as a group of people before we experienced the Ma'afa or the slave, the Atlantic slave trade, the system of slavery, chattel slavery. Before we experienced that, who were we then? Because that's who we truly are right now. And there's been much information telling you that you're this or you're that, and you really don't know who you are. But if you take the time to do some research, you can find out some factual information, because there are brothers and sisters who have done a great deal of research to find out and to put the pieces together to figure out who we are. So the first step is to do research and find out who we are historically. Now, a lot of the other things, like naming yourself, you know, like we have some creative names in our community, and I really feel good about that. You know, when they have names like Keasia and Jacoby and Jakai, and all, those are names that we thought of. You see, we thought of those names, and so that's a way of naming ourselves. Sometimes we laugh at ourselves and say, oh, that's ghetto and all this kind of stuff, you know. Hey, what that is our people trying to speak for ourselves and create for ourselves and name ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. So brother, that's my answer.
Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Great answer. Again, right, we're stepping into a new realm and a new era in which we're more confident in being ourselves, right? Breaking away from the shackles, but even more we have to do those in terms of what's been placed in front of us. How do we properly use technology? How do we serve that to our kids in a way in which they continue to be our children again and not being influenced by the greater culture? How do we stop running to these stores and spending up all of our money just because they say that they have a sale for us? We're going to have to grow. We could do that politically. We could do that economically. We could do that individually, right, within ourselves, culturally, and a comprehensive education. And now we're getting ready for this great show today. Brothers, I thank y'all for joining me today. It's Men in Action, African-American Men in Action. 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you got a question or thought. Salido is not in effect today, so you're just going to have to stand by and listen if you don't want to talk. Or you can send me a text if you got my number, 804-484-0736. But I'll try to get you in as best as I can. But now, bring the brothers in, right? Because I got to do it, y'all. Come bring up Men in Action. Here we go. Oh, yeah. I'm starting off with 54. Bring it. Right. 67, 54. Who's on the line? Because some of the brothers' numbers I don't have right now, Brother George. 6754. Who is this?
It's Shep Sue, brother.
Hey, Shep Sue, what's happening, brother? All right, this brother,
hey,
Shep Sue, let me
right
put you on. Let's start with you, Brother Shep Sue. You were one of the facilitators in the Men in Action meeting, transformation meeting. On the other night, what are your impressions, your takeaway, and what did you deliver to the Men in Action night?
Hey, man, the session, man, was power-packed, brother. You know, the ancestors were there with us. God Almighty was there with us. And what I tried to do, I did an analogy of the show that was on the Discovery Channel several years ago, The Revenge of the Elephants, and essentially told the story of this pack of young, juvenile elephants that had just killed some rhinos at a watering hole, and then when it was found out by the people that managed the park, what they found out was that the grown or bull elephants had been culled because of their tusks. And so essentially the juveniles did not have the bulls to set the order, and they had joined these packs of rogue juvenile elephants that were just doing whatever they wanted to do. And so I think that is a good analogy of just what we see as black men in America. I mean, thousands of our black men have been locked up from this whole system of white supremacy and domination. And, of course, the crack cocaine epidemic back in the late 80s took a terrible toll on our people that we still haven't really, really recovered from. And our men, a lot of men are locked up or have other issues that they're dealing with. our communities are essentially kept poor. And since we've been here since enslavement, as you were talking about earlier, you know, we are really at war. And our men are the products of war, and we're dealing with all those micro and macro attacks. And so since the male energy is compromised, then we don't have the capacity right now to be able to set the order for our communities. And what happened in that particular animal preserve, in order for the order to be reestablished, they had to go and get bulls from other parts of the territories to now reestablish the order overnight. So that group of rogue juvenile elephants that were running amok, as soon as the bulls came back in the area, then guess what? Checkmate and orders restored. So essentially, you know, our destiny in America throughout our history is to be husbands, fathers, warriors, and nation builders. And the male energy, the universal concept of the male energy does what? It sets the order of things. It sets the order in our families. It sets the order in our communities. It sets the order for the black nation. And therefore, you have balance. You have order. And the male energy is not any more powerful than the female energy. We have different roles. And since our male energy has been compromised, then there is no order setting for our people throughout the diaspora. So I kind of led with that, as well as talked about some of the challenges that we face right now within our systems that we're dealing with, as well as us not having a group analysis of white supremacy and domination that attacks us every day. And we're in a read and react scenario here in America, as well as throughout the diaspora. And until we're able to really understand what we're really up against, the power of it, the power of white supremacy domination, and put a group unified system that can defeat it. And then the second causality is us looking at identity. Who are we as African people? And mm-hmm. understanding who we are and establishing our identity, then we're going to continue to have a lot of these scenarios that we see happen, not just here, but in Brazil, in Ecuador, in Suriname, in Guyana, French Guyana, in Uruguay, Paraguay, and wherever we are, we had the same problems, you know. So that was kind of the area that I kind of touched on last week.
All right. Thank you, brother. I'm going to hold you right there, and if you could stay on the line, I appreciate it, because I want to come back to you. But I want you to begin to have us to think about how do we reestablish that order, right? And the levels that it takes, your individual selves first, right? How do you reestablish order within your own mind, right, in your own life and your own behaviors? And then how does that kind of transcend into the family, right, and reestablishing an order within the family and then order within the community? And that order then spans out and it works amongst the group that we now have systems in place to help us help ourselves. Thank you, Brother Shepsu. I'm going to move on to Brother Glenn now. Brother Glenn, here's the show.
Yes, Marvin. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you? Just wanted to get your take on our Men in Action night and your thoughts on it as well.
Well, I was blessed to be there with in the presence of a number of powerful gentlemen that ranged from a variety of educational levels and social levels, but we had one level of consciousness, and that was for our community to be made whole again. The focus was to talk about violence and how it exists, why it exists, and ways to curb it. And this was an introductory session, and the speakers led with items like what Brother Sitchu talked about and other speakers, and the main takeaways that I had really were 7 points of clarity that I just want to address, that each speaker kind of touched on in some shape, form, or fashion. They all, in some degree, spoke of God, some level of spirituality, that's what we need to have to understand that there's something greater than ourselves that we are in need of accountability towards, and that has given us a sense of purpose. They talked about love, or in this case, the lack thereof, because they have reached out to some young men in the community that have initiated certain levels of violence, and they've come to find out that they really lack love. They lack love from either family or love of themselves, and so they use that to lash out. You know, there's a phrase that's been out for a while that hurt people hurt people, and so that hurt can come from a lack of love. The other point is community and the need to reestablish community or to revisit the village mentality. We're famously known for saying that it takes a village to raise a child, and at this point in time, the village is in shambles, and we need to revisit that and go back to that sense of community where it was it was a safe place to be, and to revisit that, and that comes with that sense of hierarchy that that the brother just talked about with regard to that male power, but also the balance, not just from a dominant standpoint, but to work in tandem with the female power and energy that exists. And it's that sense of balance that's brought back to our community and that's demonstrated to our young people that show a degree of love that they need and fuels that vacuum that they have right now. It goes on to the other point that was talked about was education, and education to a point of self-determination. We can receive education, but are we receiving an education that's dictated to us by the colonizer, the enslaver, or are we receiving education that is allowing us to free ourselves and to reach a higher level of consciousness? And that's where we can get to a greater degree of self-determination. We had a discussion about overcoming our differences. It was mentioned that a number of people came from different walks of life, and it seems as if those differences have been used and leveraged against us throughout the centuries to keep us weakened so that we can't be the driving force that's needed to elevate us and to also reach the status where we once were. But if we can overcome the differences that we have, then make a move to the last point, which is to gain common ground. Once you gain common ground, then we reverse the statement of a house divided cannot stand but will fall, and that our house will stand. And that all goes back to every other thing that was talked about. The house can stand because we're educated and we know who we are. The house can stand because we reestablish community. The house can stand because love is there, and it's the love of God based upon the love of ourselves all in that village and that community. So all of these things were discussed, they were touched upon, and they were used as talking points for us to enable ourselves to reverse the levels of violence and negative actions within our community. And I found it to be very powerful and enlightening and uplifting.
Thank you, Brother Glenn. Thank you. And it's so true, right? These are the things that we need to, one, talk about, two, contemplate, and then three, act on, right? And take these action steps to reestablish that order that we need in our family and in our community and within ourselves. I want to ask you a quick question before I let you go. What would be your thoughts on gaining common ground? What would be a step that you would consider for us to take in a direction in terms of that?
Identifiable struggles. That's where you can find the common ground. We all have, regardless of, for me, whether it's educational or economic status, at some point in time, it kind of goes back to the movie The Hate You Give, and it's the pull over on the side of the road moment when the police officer comes. Regardless of whether you're driving a hoopty or a Bugatti, if you're a person of color, if you're African descent, you're pulled over and that police officer's coming to you, you're going to have some degree of anxiety, and so that's the commonality that I'm talking about. Now, that's not great. It's not a great thing to have, but it's a discussion. It's a pathway or an entry point to a discussion that we can have about that anxiety. Why does that anxiety exist? Why do we feel like we're going to be threatened by the very people whose salaries we pay? That's one launching point. But then finding and vetting out these things that that create the anxiety, how to overcome it, and how to do it in a unified manner. And for me, that's one of the things that can help develop and strengthen our common ground. And also understand that the common ground is going to be similar to a quilt. When you do a quilt, none of the patches in the quilt look the same. Mm. But they still are tied together by a common thread. And then that common thread joins all those various looking patches. And then once they're joined together, then anyone can use that quilt for comfort, for warmth, and for a sense of just healing if need be. And so that's how we need to approach it, is that common thread that we need to bind ourselves, all of our varying patches, to form the community quilt.
That is so nice, brother. Brother Glenn, thank you. All right, we need to be that quilt, right. And you need to be, yes, a great patch in that process to get the healing process to where we are recovering, right, from that thing. So thank you very much, right, Brother Glenn.
Thanks.
I'll move on.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's go to 7316. Peace. 7316. Good show, brother. How are you?
How you doing? I'm doing good.
How about yourself?
This is Shaquille.
Hey, Brother Shaquille. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling great. I'm blessed.
All right. So I want to get your input on your portion of the Men in Action program and how we're working to resurrect our community. What are your thoughts?
First, I want to say that in all the areas of people's activity, we have to understand something, and that is a quote from Neely Fuller I would like to begin with, that says that if you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you think you understand would only confuse you. And so one of the problems that I think that we have in our community is that we continue to send our children to the colonizers to be taught and educated. And until we come into the mindset that we have to begin to build our own institutions to teach our children, then we're going to continue to be in the same spot that we've been for over 500 years. One of the things that I spoke about at the Men of Action meeting was the game of chess. That if I was to ask someone in the group, if I said D2 to D4, what would you say? There's some people in there that might understand what I'm saying, and there's a multitude of people who do not understand what I'm saying. And so, and the reason why we are in the condition that we're in is because we do not understand white supremacy and what it is. We do not know how it works. Everything else that we think that would benefit our people would be destroyed because in those areas, white supremacy has created a system. It's not about individuals. It's about systems. And in each of those people, areas of people activity, those systems has been designed for our people that look like us to always be on the bottom. So we read about this in Frantz Fanon's book, Wretched of the Earth, that's where we stand at. That's where we continue to stand at until we begin to destroy the system of white supremacy. And so I spoke about the game of chess and how white always moves first, meaning that white is always on the offense, meaning that black people are always on the defense. But can black win the game? Yes, he can. But how can he win the game? He first has to understand how white is beginning to move. He can counterattack that and become on the offense and put white on the defense. As a people, we don't know how to put white on defense. You know, because when we put white on defense, then we can continue to move until he's checkmated. As her brother said earlier, that we have to go to a point where they're checkmated, their freedom. I talked about masculinity, the brother Chef Sue talked about, and I spoke about that. What you see today is that you see that our young, especially our young boys, right, they are masculine. but they also have female emotional tendencies. And I'm not speaking about homosexuality. I'm just speaking about female emotional tendencies. And when you mix masculinity with female emotional tendencies, what you have is a very dangerous individual, because he has to learn how to control his emotions. And what happens is, at the least little thing that takes place in his life, he begins to act off feelings. He begins to act off emotions. And so the natural order of things that Chef Sue was talking about were the men that too many of our black women are raising children alone. We have too many single mother households. They're outnumbered. They're outmanned. They're at war, not just with their sons, but they're also at war with society. They're at war with our community. So what happens is that once that masculinity is mixed again with that female emotional tendency, the least of a thing that happens, they want to kill each other, shoot each other, rob each other, beat each other up, steal each other. And this is what you see out there, that's a weapon, because he hasn't learned yet to breathe, to be quiet, to take his time to learn. And these are things that he's not going to learn in public school system. And so when we speak about the school-to-prison pipeline, I kind of push back on that terminology, because I believe that it's a home-to-prison pipeline. And I think the school system is just a part of that pipeline. It's intermixed within that pipeline, meaning so that when the school system see a young man that may be having some type of emotional problem, some type of behavior problem, instead of trying to get with that young man or even that young woman and have a wraparound service for them to make sure that they're okay, what happens is they foster that. They foster that behavior. And that's how so many of our young people right now are in a juvenile detention center on their way to prison. You know, I visited a juvenile detention center probably about 3 years ago, and it's like four or five young men from the ages of 14 and 16 that got 50 years plus, 50 years plus, right? And so what do we do about that? How can we change the dynamics of freeing our children? Because there are freedoms, and then there are liberties. Freedom means that you're allowed to do what you do, live what you want to live, you know, without any type of sanctions. Liberty is that you have limited freedoms, but your freedom is based upon someone else giving you that freedom. And that's where we stand as black people. Someone gives us that freedom, right, to allow us to live where we want to live. And another thing I want to push back on is that I want us to be very conscious about when we speak about our communities, because they are not our communities. They are not our communities because we do not control anything in those communities. We need to make them our communities. We need to make them our communities, because what goes in our communities and what go out our communities, we have no control of. The finances, the money that we have, it goes to foreigners that come in our neighborhood and rape us, pillage us, take the money, and then they go off and live, and somebody else will come in and do the exact same thing. We have no control over the police departments, the fire departments, or any of that. And we may have people that work in these areas that look like us, but we don't control any of that. And so when we begin to take back our communities, we can begin to call them our communities. They can tear down a neighborhood if they want to. They don't have to ask us anything. They can literally do whatever they want to. They don't need a community board or anybody to have permission to do anything to us. Nothing. They do it when they want to, and we are powerless against that. And so what we have to do is come together as a people. And I always said it's one united force. There's an African proverb that says, when spiders unite, they can tie up a lion. So what we have to do is come on one united front. And one of our problems is, a brother brought up the book, The Miseducation of the Negro. And so I love that book, and I tell people that you ain't got to read the whole book. You can just read the very first page of that book, and it explains everything about what our problems is. It's because we have so much contempt towards each other. We have so much contempt towards our own people. And when we go to the United States educational system, what do they teach us? They teach us to praise and admire the Hebrew. They teach us to admire the Greek. And so you see how proud we are to be in sororities and fraternities, you know, with Greek letters on our chests or Greek symbols on our hats. And we take pride in that because this is what they have taught us to take pride in. And so we are so detached from who we used to be as African people that it's difficult to now get our children back because of the outside influences that they have out there so they can be, you know, most of the times when you hear us, we're in our 50s, we're in our 60s, we're in our 70s. But now we're talking about a 14-year-old or 15-year-old who's never heard of Fred Hampton, who's never heard of Marcus Garvey, who's never heard of Malcolm X, right? Who's never heard of all the great female people in our community that's done great things. They've never even heard of these people. So what happens is that when we go in the neighborhoods and we try to teach and educate them, they look at us like we're crazy. If we go in there with religion, they look at us like we're crazy, you know? And I'm going to close with this, you know, because I just want us to understand that how they look at us when we try to teach them about God and about Jesus, about Muhammad, about Moses or Isaac or any other prophet that we love in the Bible. They always ask us, who is this benevolent God that you speak about? And if this God is real, then he must hate us. Because my mother don't have food on the table. My mother's a crackhead. I've never met my father. All I see is men running in and out of the house. So what happens is, who is this Jesus that you talk about? Who is this Muhammad that you talk about? How is this God going to come and save us? What are you going to give us in return? Because you're telling me something that when I look at you, you've been going to work at the same job for 30 years and you're still struggling. I know I can go out on the street for a couple hours, 3-4 hours, and I can make $600-700. And my whole family can eat off of that. And me and my siblings can get the latest pair of Jordans off of that. They don't have no fear of going to prison. They don't have no fear of dying. Because they believe their freedom is better than oppression. Because when you look at our communities, we are oppressed. So that's a little bit, you know, where I'm coming from. I do believe that we have hope because without hope, we don't have anything, you know. And I think that there are people in our communities that don't have any hope in us. They don't have any hope in our politicians. They don't have any hope in the school system. And so they just stop going. They don't believe in it. You know, we talk about voting. We believe that this is the answer. You know, it could solve some of our problems, but it's not the answer. You know, so we have to have a value system. You know, this is what we need. You know, because we are suffering from an economic holocaust in our community. You know, we have no black hospitals. We have no black institutions. You know, and I'm not. You know, we don't have no black grocery stores. You know. We don't support each other because we've been conditioned to hate each other. And you can feel the hostility. You know, if you get on the bus with a lot of black people, you can just sense it in the air. You know, you might think something's getting ready to jump off of any second. You can feel it among our people, you know. And this was taught. This is not something that just miraculously happened between us. This was taught to us. And they keep us in those boundaries. So I'm a person that I believe that, you know, together, you know, we can do it, but we got to come together, and sometimes we have to give away, you know, those things that we hold on to. You know, I'm a Muslim, you know, but it doesn't mean that I can't work with Christians. You know, I'm going to stay a Muslim, but I know that the liberation of our people is going to cause for all of us, you know, in the Pan-African realm.
That's
of
right.
It's going to cause, it's a cause for all of us to come together, regardless of who you are. Mason, an Elk, a Baptist, a Methodist, doesn't make no difference. A Muslim, a Jew, a Christian, doesn't make no difference. You know, an Alpha, Omega, whatever you may be, whatever you hold on to, first things first is that we African people. And we don't know what we want to be called. Like the brother said, man, we're African people. That's just to be called Africans and just leave it at that. And don't let nobody else tell us what we are or who we are. We're African people. You know, and just because we've been in the land for 400 years does not mean that we're not African people. We are still African
That's right.
people. You know, so I appreciate y'all for allowing me to share, you know, and I'm here if anybody needs me for anything, especially when it comes to our people, man. I love my brothers and sisters and my people, and I pray every day, man, that we can get up out of this rut.
All right. Thank you, Brother Shakir. I hope that you can stay on the line. I got a question for you, but I want to get to the next brother on the line. Let's go down to 0191. Welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
Brother Marvin, how you doing, brother?
Hey, brother. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. James Davis is his name. But Brother Marvin, I wanted
brother
to come
James.
In and tap in on the conversation around mental health with our young males and things that are going on inside of the community. So many young males that are inside of the community have no one to talk to, have no one to bounce ideas off, but also it's not a safe space to be able to talk about mental health, right? Because I look at sometimes things from a perspective of things that happened in my life, my friends, and the culture that was around us, right? For one of us to walk up to a group of guys talking about, hey, man, I'm really going through some of my mental health, is this, that, and the third. The group would have probably turned around and shunned you. Oh, man, he's soft, he this, that, and the third, and all these other things, right? Because of the culture, we're always told to man up. We're always told you got to be tough. We're always told that you can't show no weakness and all these other things. So many of our young brothers are inside the community with no one to talk to about their mental health. So I like to, you know, put a challenge out there to a lot of brothers to see how we can figure out something that we can go inside of the community, conversations on corners, conversations on porches, conversations wherever we may find them, to talk to young brothers about mental health and being okay with talking about you're dealing with mental health. Because as a brother myself coming up out of the streets and that culture, I hid a lot of things that I was going through from a lot of people because I didn't know what they was going to do with the information. And we tend to come from a culture sometimes where people will grab these things that are perceived to be weaknesses and use them against you, right? So then you shut down, right? So you put us on a football field or basketball field or whatever, however that may be as a kid, man up, be tough, you know, show aggression, right? We go to school, man up, be tough, show some form of aggression, right? You might get in contact with a penal system. Man up, be tough, show some form of aggression, right? You never knew that you could talk about your issues because your whole life you've been told you got to be tough. And even what I found in the Men of Action group is being around other black men who can give me advice on key times when I'm going through key things in my life. And like I told Brother Marvin probably yesterday, you know, or the first day I went into the group, I had never been in a room with that many black men, and we wasn't incarcerated or partying ready to turn up and doing some crazy stuff like that. Never sat in a room full of 25, 30 black men who are all there coming together for a cause, right? I had never been in that, right? And so that was something that when I got in the room, I had to sit back for a second and observe and soak in the space that I was in and what I was being a part of, right, which was a dope experience. But how many of our young brothers in the community don't have that room to sit in? And I like to talk about my testimony, so I'll just keep it 100% real. I'm going through things in my life right now, dealing with my job and fighting this good fight of challenging systems and tearing down barriers for people coming behind me. People get to working against you. If it wasn't for the Men in Action group being able to talk to brothers like Brother George and Brother Marvin while I'm going through these things and letting them know what I'm going through, I don't know where I may be, right? I can revert to my old ways, right? I can revert to my old peers who mean me nothing. But the ability to have an older black man that I can talk to that understands me, that hears me, that sees me, that really can give me that wrap arms around me thing that I need while I'm getting beat up, right? Because as a man, we always told we got to be tall, stand tall, go to war, right? Sometimes you get beat up, right? Sometimes you get beat up. That's just the reality of this fight of life. But being around brothers that can pick you up in times like that, it is key. I also am reaching out anybody that can hear my voice. We have to advocate on behalf of Brother Johnny Holman. Johnny Holman is the 62-year-old deacon who was just murdered in Atlanta a couple months back during a traffic stop. The brother got into an accident, a real fender bender, was trying to plead his case, ended up on the ground, getting tased, had an asthma attack and everything, and died. So this situation needs our attention. So if you have not heard about what's going on with this case, you can go online. You can find the full police video of what happened to this brother. You can hear the brother saying, "Hey, man, I can't breathe. My asthma, trying to tell him, get off of him. And this man is dead. Then the man ended up dead, laying on the ground in handcuffs. They talking about giving him a sternum rub and telling him to wake up. Wake up, you killed him, right? Please, 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 if you can hear my voice, look into this case that is going on currently right now. Send emails to the district attorney. Send emails to the attorney general in Atlanta. Send emails to the local council, the local mayor, whoever you can. But look into this. This man was a deacon. This man was in a fender bender. He was trying to explain that the accident wasn't his fault. He's saying, "Hey, man, it's not my fault. They hit my car." The cop told him, "Either you're going to sign this ticket or you're going to jail." He said, "Hey, man, why are you trying to make me sign a ticket for something I didn't do?" The cop escalated the situation, threw him on the ground. You can hear him yelling, "Hey, man, I'm a senior citizen. Why are you doing me like this?" The cop jumped on top of him, started tasing him, tased the brother to death, and the man is no longer here. It is a terrible case. So if you can, take some time out today just to research Johnny Holman, Atlanta. Please research this case, and if you can find some time in your life to send something to an elected official, that please charge this cop with all this. Even the tow truck driver who came on scene for the accident jumped on his back and helped the cop lock him up, but also kill him. He put his foot on the back of his neck. Now, here's where the kicker's going to hit. Both of these people were black men. These were black men that did this to him. That is crazy to me. That as a black man and everything that we're dealing with in our communities, you can pull another black man to the ground, handle him like this, and he loses his life over a traffic accident. Probably when you look at this truck, the brother had maybe $500 in damage. That's how minor of a traffic accident this was. And then the brother was a deacon. This is a deacon. So this isn't a man out living a criminal lifestyle or anything. Not saying that if you live in a criminal lifestyle that you should be pulled over and executed. That's not what I'm saying either. But what I'm saying is this is probably a law-abiding citizen, a senior citizen, and he's a man of God, a man of the cloth, and a man of the church. And for that to happen to him during a minor accident, we have to use our voices for this. So any black man, black sister, whoever that's on this call, if you can hear my voice, please look into this case and do your part about asking for justice for Brother Johnny Holman. And I really do appreciate you for having me here on the show today, Brother Marvin. And I also want to end with saying black mental health does matter with our young black boys. And I also want to say that being an individual that came from that street culture, I was never taught that talking about your mental health was okay, which many of my other counterparts that don't come from that culture were never told the same thing as well. And we got to create these spaces where young black brothers and old black brothers can come together and we can all talk about what's going on in our community, have conversations about how we can help it, but also have conversations about how we're doing. Because so often, so many of us suffer in silence and there's no one there to ask how we're doing. And that really has to change about our community. And I really respect what Men of Action is trying to do to create that space, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother James. Again, justice for Johnny Holman. Let's go out there, right, and let's be active. Again, advocacy and using our voice is one step that we could do to neutralize the system that's going on and be able to bring justice for our people. Thank you, Brother James. All right, let's go back to I want to do a dual question on this, and then Brother Book, I see I'm going to get to you in just a minute so we can have the one segment. But Brother Shepsu, I want to bring you in. You there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
And Brother Shaquille.
here's the question that I have, and you all can decide who want to go first. How do we understand our people, system, white supremacy? How do people begin to understand what that system is?
You broke up, brother. Can you say it again for me, please?
Okay. How do our people begin to understand the system of white supremacy?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, I'll be brief because I want Shaquille to be able to put it down as well. You know, I think we look at it from a particular perspective. The first thing is that we got to understand, we got to take a look at European history, okay? We got to understand Greco-Roman culture. We got to go back a few thousand years to the Hyksos, the Assyrians, and look at their worldview, at their worldview. We say white supremacy, but really it's white nationalism, it's European or Asiatic nationalism. And we go back, we take a look at the historical record. You can see themes, common themes of power, control, domination. They call themselves settlers, but no, they were invaders. And we look at the commonalities of their behaviors. And then we got to go back to several more thousand years before that of how the Africans mutated and lost their melanin to be able to deal with the cold environment. And not only was it a physiological change with them losing melanin to be able to deal with the cold environments in Europe, but it was a psychological psychological process that caused them to be more aggressive. All right? So it's nature and it's also nurture. And then we got to take a look at the psychological formations of power, control, and domination, and how the invasion of South America, in North America, and Tanzania, and West Africa, and East Africa, and Australia. Look at those dynamics. Study them. And also now take a look at the economical system, okay, the system of governance around the world, because white supremacy and white nationalism is incorporated in all of those systems. And then as we're studying and dialoguing what's in place, then now we can have a group analysis for how white supremacy domination has compromised our mental, physical, and spiritual health. And these systems are powerful, but they are not all powerful. They can be broken down and eradicated.
All right. Thank you, Brother Shepsu. All right, Brother Shaquille, what you got?
Yeah, well, we first must return and claim our past in order to move forward in our future. And so we have to have an understanding of who we were, and that will free us to embrace who we are now. And so when I spoke about these are systems, that we got to begin to answer the question why. Now, we can talk about the problems all day long, but you have to ask why. So the systems that we have are patterns. They are patterns of perceptions, logic, symbolisms, formations, thoughts, speech, action, emotional response, as conducted simultaneously in all areas of people's activity. And so when I talk about those systems, I'm speaking about economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war. And what is the ultimate purpose? As Shepsu was saying, the ultimate purpose of the system is to prevent white genetic annihilation on Earth. Right? So we know that their gene is recessive. We know that our genes are dominant. And so you could never have this all free for all love among all races of people, because what would happen if we did that? White would disappear. And so racism is based upon their genetic survival to make sure that they can live longer, you know, is 100 years, 200, a million years later. But also the racism that we suffer is that the darkest people on the earth are going to be the most hated and the most prejudiced against. But if we begin to teach our children, and I know it's a cliche, but if we begin to teach our children knowledge of self, that is your first step. Because if you call something long enough, you will begin to believe it. If you call a nigga long enough, you will begin to accept it. You will begin to call yourself nigga. You begin to claim it as your own. And that's the perception that our people, our youth have of themselves. If you call savage enough, you will believe that you are a savage. And so you will wear T-shirts with savage on it. You will have rappers preaching about I'm a savage. So if you hear it enough, you will begin to believe it. And so in the entertainment business, that of course white supremacy runs that too, you see the rappers that our kids are looking up to now, are respecting now. You look at them and see that they give these individuals to us as, you know, as our heroes. So the words that we speak sometimes don't weigh on our children because they look at our words as not having any substance or any value. And they are confused and believing that rap lyrics is prophecy. You can go to a 5 and 6 year old right now that can quote you rap lyrics like it ain't nothing. But ask them to solve a math problem, or ask them, you know, where a period goes at the end of the sentence, they can't tell you. Because what do they hear over and over and over again? They hear these rappers singing, dancing, entertaining. And so it becomes law to them. It becomes prophecy to them. And so the power that we have to have among ourselves, again, it always begins with taking our children back and reestablishing the order inside of our communities, inside of our institutions and schools. We have to do it. You know, Chef Soup, you know, mad respect what he's doing and trying to assist these kids, you know, over at the middle school. That's what we need. We need brothers in positions that can teach because they don't see enough of us. I'm not saying there's not none of us, but they don't see enough of positive black male role models in their community.
True.
They don't see enough of us. And that's where we have to begin at. But to teach them about white supremacy, yes, I believe that if you're not teaching your kid about white supremacy, then you're doing a disservice to your child. I believe that. And this is not about hate, you know, and I know that we are spiritual people, you know, so when we speak about teaching anything about the races, sometimes our religious convictions take over. And no, we don't want to talk about that because we think that it's hate. No, it's not hate. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself. And so we have to begin to teach our children, man, that African first, family is first. And you have an allegiance and an obligation to your family. If you look at Chinese culture, you know, if you look at Chinese culture, Asian culture, if they shame the family, what happens? They may even kill that person. Or they ban them from the family. You have shamed us. You have put a bad name on our legacy, on our name. Our children don't have that. You know, they don't have that honor towards the family, towards the structure. And so a wise man once said, if you don't have no shame, do as you please. And so what you see right now in our culture, as you see right now in our culture, we just do what we want to do. If you look at YouTube, if you look at TikTok and you see us, you know, we just act a plain fool. You know, that's we just do whatever we want to do. We put the most grotesque stuff on there, and it's crazy. It's crazy, and that's the world that we live in now. And so we better come up with something quick. I just want to say to the brother, man, that just spoke about mental health, man, I don't take it lightly. But I do want to say this, man, if you black in America, you suffer from a mental health condition. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you got a PhD from Harvard, you still suffer from a mental health condition, right? Because Harvard, you know what I'm saying, is another white institution that sometimes African people are so proud to say, I graduated from Harvard. If you know the history of Harvard, it is one of the most racist institutions ever existed on this earth, you know, and it still runs the same way, right? We're still going to get a European education. Even if we graduate from Harvard, it's still a European education. When you open those books up, a European wrote it, they're going to dictate how you think, they even dictate your perception or even how you see yourself. Because what happens when he talks about those black police officers, I'm going to close with this, because I think it's very serious, is that even though they're black, doesn't mean that they're one of us. And it's like when you graduate from these universities and from these institutions, you are trained. You are trained to be racist towards your own people. You are trained that way. You are trained that way. So to see the mistreatment of people that look like us against us, it's no surprise. We do it every day. We do it every day. And now we have another one, Mr. Johnny Holman. The brother said, it's just like George Floyd. And when you see signs, never again, you know, justice for George Floyd. And then we'll have a bunch of picket signs to say justice for Johnny Holman. I mean, how are we going to give Mr. Holman justice? How are we going to give dead people justice? What are we going to do about it? That's why I speak about the power of white supremacy. What are we going to do about it? Because believe me when I tell you this, a month from now, 2 months from now, there'll be another Johnny Holman. Trust me when I tell you this. Because this is what white supremacy is. Yeah, it doesn't matter who does it. If you put a black man in the White House, man, it's still white supremacy. We are tricked, you know, and sometimes I even say, man, we delusional. You know? But we got it, you know. We got to start speaking about solutions, you know, and coming up with ways and means and ways to address these issues. That's my take.
Brother Shaquille, thank you, sir. Really appreciate
yes,
that.
Sir.
Powerful, powerful reflections, right? Again, we have to, like Brother Booker said, we got to get to the place where we're honest with ourselves about what's happening and what we can do about it. Thank you, brother. We'll go back over to Brother James. James, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Brother Marvin.
All right. Can you share, you don't mind, because you sent me a text. Can you kind of go through what it is that you sent me so our listeners can kind of hear the conversation that you've had, if you don't mind sharing, with another listener that just tuned into the show from what they're hearing?
Yeah, just the power of us having a space where other brothers can tune in and hear information and find their tribe. You know, because right now as we speak, we got a new brother on the line that's listening to the call, that's even putting other people on the call right now. And this is a brother who has been in the fight. This brother has been down there. I mean, everything from politics to you name it. He's in there. He's fighting. He's trying to find his tribe and make change for his community. And he's been through some things down there. And he's actively listening right now on the call. And, you know, the brother's like, man, I'm glad you sent this to me because this is something that is great information. The brother is touching his spirit right now. So even as we have these phone calls, the more of us we can put in place on these calls to hear, we can develop our tribe, for lack of a better word. And Brother Marvin, this space that we have here is much needed. It's been needed for a long time. But it's also a place where we can talk about ideas and how we can execute them, as Brother Shaquille just mentioned as well, which is key, because we can have a lot of ideas, but execution is key, and we have to do these things to change our community. But I just commend everyone on the call because these individuals hear you all teaching and passing information that a lot of us won't get in at first, right? And so now they have a place that every Saturday that they can tune into and get this information, which is very valuable, but now it's also inspiring other individuals to get in the conversation as well, talk about the work they're doing. We create this network that can scan across the country where we can talk about resources and so on and so on. So just to let you all know, there is individuals who are gaining by the call, and they also are in love with the information that they're hearing.
Thank you, Brother James. This is a talk show, but behind all of this talk is a whole lot of action because our people need help. And the only people that's going to be able to effectively help us help ourselves is us, because we know what we need. And the more that the individuals who know the heart of the people, know the condition of the people, know the mindset of the people, know the pain of the people, get involved and activate, change begins to happen. So that change comes in level, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And as our hearts change and as we begin to heal, then we can redirect ourselves and get back to a place and a space where we can be proud of who we are on this earth.
All right, I'm going to move on over to Brother Booker now, and I'm going to get him to do his Be the One segment, and then we'll try to wrap it up from there. Brother Shepsu and Brother Shakir, I got one more question for you both before we wrap up, and I'll bring you back, Brother James, as well. Brother Booker.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the
how
show.
Doing,
how are
brother?
You? I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, brother. And as always, peace to all the brothers and sisters within the sound of my voice. And I start off with one word to explain the whole conversation today. Slavery. Okay. To have white supremacy, you got to have slavery. And that's the genesis of slavery is the white supremacy. To maintain that slavery, okay? And when we talk to one being honest with himself, that we have to acknowledge, we have to be honest with ourselves in order to then love ourselves as a people and admit the fact that we don't love, because of slavery, we don't love ourselves as a people. I mean, we see every day that we don't love ourselves. We kill each other. We rape each other. We pimp each other. We abuse each other. We lie to each other. We steal from each other. We cheat each other. We fornicate. We do everything sinful, if you will, to ourselves. Everything. So that's self-hatred at its max. Because if we loved ourselves, we wouldn't do those things to ourselves. And Brother mentioned earlier the white man's fear of being wiped from the face of the planet with integration. I believe his strategy for survival is to put himself in us. Put himself in us. That's what slavery is all about. Put himself in us. Because he understands eventually the white face will no longer be. But the white mind, the devilish mind, the sinful mind will be in us. So he will live in us. All the things that he did, that he taught us, we do. All the things. All of the hoeing, the stealing, the fornicating, the oral sexing, the homosexuality, the lying, all of it he taught us. He has put himself in us. That's what slavery was all about. To the point that one of his definitions for the word heaven, and this is his Christian Science definition of the word. Christian meaning there's some Christianity in it, and there's some science meaning there's some proof. We talk science, we're talking proof. We're now looking at Christianity scientifically, meaning logically, or as my great-grandmother would say, using one's common sense. And under that definition, he says heaven is a state of thought in which sin is absent, and the harmony of divine mind is manifest. So when your mind has no sinful thoughts in it, then harmony, the harmony of divine mind, meaning righteous mind, meaning heavenly mind, is manifest. Then you have heaven. That is not what he wants. He doesn't want a heavenly mind, a mind without sin. He wants the mind full of sin. All the things he has put in us, all of the things he has taught to us, the sinful mind, which in essence has put us in hell. Being honest with ourselves. So as the brother's been talking all day long, how do we move forward? We have to acknowledge that. We have to understand the situation that we're in, what caused it, And when we understand the cause of our situation, then we come back to now, what do we do about it? How do we get it out of us? And the simple answer is, to see heaven, you have to kill the devil in you. So it goes back to what we said, we got to be honest with ourselves, and it starts with each one of us individually. I can define who I am. I know who I am. Ain't no lying my way about that. I can define who I am. If I'm a hoeing, stealing, lying, cheat, I know that. But if I'm a righteous, godly man, Father of the universe, you know, if that's who I am in my essence of my making, in my mind, I know that. I can define who I am, and I can create my heaven. And when we talk about our youth, what we're lacking in our youth is the truth of teaching them the rightful thing of our Father, the Creator God, of who we really are. We need our children, our youth need parenting, as white folks call it. Parenting. Mother, father, and raise. Our youth, all we're doing is raising our future. All we're doing is raising our legacy. We are raising our eternity. We live on in our children. I was telling someone the other day, God does not create day after day after day after day, and we wake up, we say, thank God for this day he created. God doesn't work. God has created eternity. Include all the days. We just don't understand that. We don't know, as all the brothers been talking about, who we are as a people, the greatness that's in us, slavery. The brother said, what caused it? We got to look at that. Be honest, slavery. We're a product of our slave master. And I'm going to end with this, brother. Being honest with ourselves, we have to admit we are descendants of house niggas.
Mm.
We're not descendants of the field niggas. We're not the descendants of the Nat Turners, of the Denmark Beezy, and those that were before him that was fighting for freedom and running around killing, doing what they had to do to get away. They weren't trying to integrate into his system and become one of his politicians. They were trying to kill him and get the hell out of here. As the brothers mentioned earlier, war. We're not fighting for you to treat us right. We're not fighting to have an equal say in your system. They were fighting to get out of his system. They were fighting for their freedom. We're not their descendants. We're descendants of the house niggas. Yes, sir, boss. Yes, sir, master. Understand, master. Oh, master, look at master. Master's so beautiful. Oh, ain't it, master? Tell me about the Easter Bunny, master. Tell me about Santa Claus, master. Tell me about Thanksgiving work again, master. Oh, master, here y'all, master. You sick, master? We sick? House niggas. We're not men. We faggots, and I ain't talking about homosexuals. I'm not talking about that. Y'all know the street term I'm talking about. You chumps. In that language. We're not men. We nothing but his niggas. Because we descendants of house niggas. We want to stay here. We want to make it merit. We want to make it great again and better for him. So he would pat us on our heads and thank us for staying with him even longer. Ain't I got some good niggas? Just like a dog. That's us. We have to be honest with ourselves, brother. That's the one. And love ourselves. That's the second one, which leads to the third one we'll talk about next week, loving your people. They all one and the same, brother. All right. Thank you for the opportunity, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Brother Booker.
Peace.
That's
being
the one.
Brother.
Peace. 845-277-9250. Brother Booker said a whole lot. How that made you feel. Some people going to be mad. Some people going to say you right. But this whole conversation is some things that we need to think about, whether it's right or wrong, might be true. 845-277-9250. I'm going to go back to Brother Shep Sue for a minute. Brother Shep, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here, brother.
All right. Thank you for joining us as we wrap this up and wind down. We're in the... And we talked about this the other day. post-COVID, we're in a mental health crisis, and we've been talking about mental health, and we're going to do some things in regard to mental health. But what are some strategies that you could just share with our listeners right now as we work through this process of being in post-COVID America and the mental health that issues that we already face on top of that due to our enslavement and segregation and black codes and racism and Jim Crow and so on and so forth. We continue to go on. What are some strategies or techniques that you would share with our people that they can use?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I'm a social worker by profession. And in looking at the system of mental health, I'm in a precarious scenario because, you know, I'm starting to break away from how we look at, I guess, the common terminology of mental health. And our mental health is tied to our history, okay, our environment, our biology, and our culture under oppression, all right? And so when we take a look at anxiety and depression, for example, you know, these are ancestral issues, all right, that have been kind of tied to our genetic ancestry here, dealing with the castrations, the rapes, the burnings, the boilings, brothers being tarred and feathered, being beheaded, you know, skinned alive, so on and so forth. And then now we're under a system that, as we said earlier, provides micro and macro attacks to us every day. We're in an educational system that does not answer the question of who we are as African people here in America, all right? And then we're in the communities that are constantly under attack, whether you think you're a middle-class Negro or you're someone living in a neighborhood dealing with redlining, so on and so forth. We all are attacked by the same system. So with that being said, our mental health is tied to all those things that I just talked about. So how we get healthy is that we got to, first of all, identify and understand what we're up against, which the mass of our people, as Shaquille said earlier, do not really understand, all right? The second piece is that if we're going to be healthy again, then now we got to be able to connect to and heal those ancestral traumas that were taking place on the slave ships, in Elmina, Dungeon, Cape Coast, the Door of No Return, and Gorey Island. We got to now be able to reach out to the ancestors and now heal those wounds that are ancestral in nature. All right. The last piece is that we got to now be able to now take a look at African culture, or the Ashanti, the Fon, the Gwan, the Denchira, the Yoruba, the Manding, the Malinke, and now have a revivalist movement around traditional African culture. And as we are embracing the culture, as we have an organized, systemic analysis of white supremacy and domination, all right, and we're using the culture to now heal the ancestors, then now we're able to now create homeostasis. So me having a referral, tells me to go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, you know, hey, I can say that, okay, and can make those referrals, but again, we can't use their system to heal ourselves. We got to be able to use our culture to speak to, again, the history, the biology, the environment, and the culture to be able to be the catalyst for our healing, all right? So the psychological movement is based off white supremacy domination. The social work movement is based off white supremacy domination. The whole rehab counseling, all of the healing sciences are steeped in those pedagogies. And unfortunately, many of the so-called healing professionals that look like us are trained in those same systems, all right? So how can we use the enemy's pedagogy to heal ourselves is a $1 million question, all right? So again, culture is the answer. Healing ancestral wounds is the answer, all right? Separating ourselves from the European reality and cosmogony is the answer, all right? So it's a multifaceted approach.
and we're able to have the dialogue on black mental health and break this thing down, we'll be able to take this to another level and have a few hours or longer to fully manifest where we're going with this thing.
Thank you, Brother Shep. Appreciate you. Again, that mental health dialogue is coming soon because I think we got to go there and we got to be able to look at things from the beginning to the end and how we can resurrect ourselves. I'm going to the lines. Brother, I'm going on over to 0148. This is Brother Lush.
Good afternoon, brother, and thank you so very much for picking my call. I'm just listening. I am just full of wonder after all of the expressions. Particularly, I want to direct something to Brother James. Thank you so very much for that news report out of Atlanta. I had seen it, but I didn't see it. But now that you've clarified some things for me, I'm definitely going to share this with my inner circle of friends and associates and to make them become aware. Thank you so very much.
Brother James, you there?
Nope. No problem, my brother. No problem. We appreciate you being on the call.
Thank you, Brother Lush. All right, let me see if I can get Brother Shaquille back in here. Brother Shaquille, got about 3 minutes left. You got any closing comments? I'm keeping your line open, Brother James and Brother Shep Sue, as we close out for today. Thoughts from you, Brother Shaquille?
First, I just want to say thanks to Brother Booker, man. Powerful, 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 powerful. I was moved and touched and agree with every last single word that the brother said. My closing arguments would be that, you know, all African people in this world are one family. And we have an obligation to stand side by side with one another because we have a racial membership in the African family. And that's the most important thing that we should be focusing on, man. It's liberation of our people. And how are we going to do it? Self-determination, as we say. And so, again, to all the brothers, man, that shared, just honored, man, to be among you, humble enough to learn, because that's the thing is that for anyone who's trying to acquire knowledge, you know, you got to be humble enough to receive knowledge and to learn. If you're not humble enough to learn, then you won't learn anything. And we got to begin to organize, and I'm going to close out with this from Mr. Carmichael, who said if you organize a little bit, you'll get a little bit done. If you don't organize at all, you won't get anything done. But if you organize a lot, you'll get a lot done. So let's begin to organize, man, and save our people. Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Thank you, brother. All right, Brother Shep Sue, closing comments.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say that, you know, we're in a different season. This is the rise of the African king and queen. And the global warming is not all due to carbon dioxide emissions. It's due to a rising spirit, you know, of that thing that's most black. That's black people who are connected to the very core of the universe. The European birth rate is in decline. Okay, the African world birth rate around the world is booming. This is our time. The climate is changing as a sign to show us the true power of the ancestors. And our ancestors are reawakening. They're reawakening. They're coming to the forefront, and they're going to guide this process. So we're in a different season, and we're going to see some powerful change. And I want to end with a very powerful African proverb: "What was lost in the fire shall be found in the ashes." Madassi.
Thank you, brother. Brother James, final comments.
Brother Marvin, I really do want to say I appreciate you for having me on the show here today, man. I really do appreciate it. I thank all those individuals who got on the call to even give us their time today. You know, you could have been all the places in the world, but you're here with us, and that means a whole lot greatly. But I would like to end with the words of a sister that says, "You don't make progress by standing on the sidelines, whimpering and complaining. You make progress by implementing ideas." Thank you, Brother Miles, for having me here today.
All right. Thank you, brothers and sisters. And that's it for this week. It's African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you, our people.
Do it.
All we have to do is continue to do the work of working on ourselves each day, every day, one day at a time. Until next week, Peace and blessings. Love you all. Amen. So forth. Ashe.